Hello, I am delighted to introduce Who Cares Presents Extraordinary Women in the final part of this season. And today we have an incredible woman. Nemonte Nkwino belongs to the Rani people, an indigenous community in the Ecuadorian rainforest. I've been following her work for several years after I first came across a really powerful article she wrote in 2020 critiquing Western civilization. In it, Nemonte said, "You forced your civilization upon us and now look where we are. Global pandemic, climate crisis, species extinction, and driving it all, widespread spiritual poverty. When you say that you are urgently looking for climate solutions, yet continue to build a world economy based on extraction and pollution, we know you are lying, because we are the closest to the land and the first to hear her cries." Nemonte founded the SIBO Alliance, an indigenous-led nonprofit championing indigenous rights and culture. And she also acted as plaintiff in a groundbreaking lawsuit against the Ecuadorian government, arguing that it had not obtained prior consent from the Warani people to put up their land for auction. The ruling went in their favor and protected 500,000 acres of Amazonian rainforest and Warani territory from oil extraction. It also set a legal precedent for other indigenous communities to use the law to protect their land. As a result of her leadership in 2020, Nemonte won numerous awards, including being named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People. And the ultimate award, Nemonte had a brand new Ecuadorian lizard species named after her. It was such a privilege to get to sit and speak with Nemonte and her translator Alex Goff on their recent trip to London.
Protections have to be put in place for those vital forests, and sometimes that takes a David versus Goliath style fight. And that is just what happened when one Amazonian tribe in Ecuador battled the government to protect the rainforest and their home.
So yeah, such an honor to meet you. Thank you so much. And to begin, maybe could you share a little bit about yourself and your community, where you come from?
My name is Nemonte Nkwino. I'm a Waurani woman, mother and leader from Pastaza province in the Ecuadorian Amazon.
And you kind of came into a position of leadership in that community. Can you maybe speak about that journey and why you became a leader, how you became a leader?
So
first, I'd like to give a little context about my people. The Waurani people have protected a vast Amazonian territory for thousands of years, and it's there where we've kept our culture alive. We live on the land, and we protect a very healthy and biodiverse territory. And that really is the result of the battles and the efforts of our ancestors to provide us with their legacy, with this inheritance, which is the territory. And about 60 years ago, my people were first contacted by outsiders, by Western civilization. And the result of that contact was the spread of diseases like polio and measles. Many of my ancestors died during that time. And my father was born in the time before contact. And so he tells stories about those days and also about the suffering that people endured during that time. And contact was first established by American evangelical missionaries who came into our territory and imposed their culture and their belief system upon us as Waurani. We were led to believe, made to believe that our culture was inferior to Western culture.
Poco a poco viendo el sufrimiento y de eso yo como niña misma di cuenta
At the same time that the evangelical missionaries were in our territory teaching us these things, I also had other teachers who were my elders. And it was through them that I learned about the Waurani worldview and how for thousands of years my people have lived in harmony and deep connection with nature. I was taken by the evangelical missionaries when I was a young girl out of the territory and forced into school. And I suffered a lot during that time. But I escaped from that situation, went back to my community and with a renewed desire to reconnect with my roots. And that's really where I became motivated to grow as a leader and to protect my people's land and culture.
Pueblo y con la naturaleza, eso me hizo crecer como una mujer fuerte.
How old were you when you escaped from school, and how was that experience?
Tenía ya casi 15 años porque yo vivía en la selva.
I was 15 years old. I grew up in my community. I didn't go to Western school. I spent time in the forest with my parents and my elders. I was a very curious kid. I always wanted to learn more about the forest and our culture. And I was taken by the missionaries. They put me in an airplane and flew me out of the territory. And that was the first time that I ever stepped foot on pavement. And seeing how life was outside of the territory, how people in the cities lived, I began to realize that all of the things the missionaries were telling us about the values and the superiority of Western culture was actually a lie, that people weren't living better in this environment.
Y yo quedé 3 años en Quito capital, viviendo con los evangélicos, aprendiendo de la Biblia.
They took me to Quito, Ecuador's capital city, where I spent 3 years studying the Bible, learning to speak Spanish for the first time. And the missionaries would send me back into the territory to try to convert my own people. So I would go in and I would talk about God and Jesus in the territory. And one day, an elder Waurani woman pulled me aside and she said, "Nemonte, you know, I don't agree with what you're doing. You're spreading something that's not your culture. And this isn't your path. You have a lot more you can offer your people than what you're currently doing."
Tienes que dejar. No debes estar yendo ese camino. Tú tienes que volver a sus ancestros. Y ahí empecé a trabajar.
And so I began to work principally with women in Waurani communities. I was elected as the Indigenous Federation, the Waurani Federation's Director of Gender and Family, and began to work with women across the territory. And it was in doing that work with my people that I began to understand what was really needed, what our fight really needed to be about. Because the threats against our way of life and our territory were increasing. I was seeing the spread of the influence of Western society and Western industrial extraction, and that we needed to confront this threat.
No van a respetar. Y luego ya empecé a hacer mi.
I saw how the importance of ensuring that the children learned what our culture was all about, that they could learn from our elders, hear their stories and their songs. And it was at that time that I also began to meet other indigenous nations, other neighboring communities and communities further north in the Ecuadorian Amazon. I took a trip up to Lago Agrio, which is an oil town, and met with indigenous peoples that lived in the outskirts of that town. And it was very eye-opening for me because I heard this narrative coming from the government and the missionaries about how oil equals development and that oil was going to bring really positive changes to the Amazon. But the reality that I saw was very different. I saw how oil had dramatically changed these communities, how it had made their quality of life much worse, how it had resulted in deforestation as roads were being built into the territories and contamination of people's drinking water. I began to hear these testimonies from people. The oil companies, the governments talked about how there were the technologies, they were implementing the technologies to safely extract oil. But I saw that this was a lie. And I saw how not only were communities getting sick from oil extraction, but they were losing their own culture, they were losing their language. I saw the rise in social problems within communities, domestic violence, alcoholism. And I saw that the communities were no longer living in harmony with nature. And so I began to get involved in a project to build access to clean water through rainwater catchment systems in these impacted communities. And it was doing that work and meeting more and more with communities that I really began to recognize that where I come from, which is a territory without oil extraction, we aren't suffering in the same way that these communities are suffering. And I began to get really angry, really indignant at the suffering of other communities. How did I get involved in this water project? It was at that time that there was a major oil spill into two of the most important rivers in the Ecuadorian Amazon. And I saw how the oil companies and the government didn't offer any real solution or remediation for that damage. They showed up in the communities that were where their river was covered in oil, and they offered them a small bag with a can of tuna, some oil, and some salt. And they told these families that this was food that would last for 15 days. And these are big families, and it was not enough. So I began to ask myself, what can I do? What can I do about this situation? It was at that time that I met my two dear friends, Alex and Mitch, who were living in the north and beginning to work on a project to bring access to clean water to communities that had been impacted for decades by oil. And so I began to work together with them to on this project to bring clean water to these communities. And it was through that process that brought together four different indigenous groups, for the first time really in our history, that we began to see the scale of the threats that we collectively face to our lands and ways of life. And I saw how in my own territory, the same thing could happen that is happening here if we don't stand up and fight. And so I made the decision, along with some other indigenous leaders, to start our own organization, which we call Cebo Alliance. And so I co-founded that organization at the same time that I co-founded Amazon Frontlines, which is an organization of international folks that are supporting our struggles. And the idea behind Cebo Alliance was that we wanted to take matters into our own hands. We wanted to develop our own solutions at the community level, not solutions that come from cities or from a top-down model. We wanted to come up with our own strategies and our own solutions.
Wow, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. Can you maybe speak a little about the lawsuit that you worked on against the oil company and how that came about and the outcome of it?
So it's through this work with other nations, through the Cebo Alliance, and this unity between indigenous peoples, that we began to develop lots of different strategies for the protection of our lands. And one of those strategies was creating our own maps of our territories, because the official maps, the narrative from the government, is that our land's just a sea of green. It's just an area of resource concessions to be exploited where people don't really live. But for us, that's not true. Our territory is a land, it's a place that's full of life. And it's part of who we are. And so I began to organize with Waurani communities, bringing women together, bringing communities together to map our own lands and develop maps that would tell the true story of our territories.
Y en el año 2012, cuando yo tenía 15, 17 años,
it was in 2012, when I was younger, that I remember the government coming into our community in a small airplane, and some government officials showed up. We didn't know what this was all about. They brought Coca-Cola for everybody. And they asked the question of the communities, what is it that you need? And they began to talk about, we could build schools here, we could build a soccer pitch. And these were all things that sounded great to us. And it was only later that, after the government had left, that we began to hear about something they were calling Oil Block 22. And we asked ourselves, Oil Block 22, where is this? Let's find this on a map. And when we looked at the map, we realized that it was exactly where we live, that this oil block encompassed 22 Huaorani communities in Pastaza province, including my own community, and that the government had authorized this oil block without properly consulting with us. That visit that they had done was their disguised attempt at a consultation. And we felt really scared and we felt really angry because the government had deceived us. They had negotiated with these oil companies without even consulting with us. And so we made the decision. We said, we have to fight back. We won't stand for this. And so we began to mobilize between all of our communities. And we brought our message loud and clear that our forest is our home and it's not for sale. And we responded to this deceit with truth and the demand that our rights must be respected. The government was violating our rights to prior and informed consultation and consent. And so through our collective voice and our collective action, we took the government to court.
Y eso era un histórico que me recuerdo que fuimos primera vez ahí en el corte
and judicial. So we took the government to court. And it was in that process that going out to the cities, protesting in the streets, going to the courthouse, it was very challenging to bring people from the communities deep in the forest out to these cities to be able to participate and for their voices to be heard. And after many, many months of struggling and fighting, we won our case. We won in the court, and that ruling canceled Oil Block 22 and freed up our land from oil extraction. And it didn't just protect our own territory. It established a legal precedent that could be used by other indigenous peoples because Huaorani territory, Huaorani communities were not the only communities that were experiencing these false consultations, this violation of our rights. This is happening all across the Ecuadorian Amazon. And so we established a victory that other communities can use to challenge their own faulty or false consultation processes. And this victory for me was a huge motivation because it showed me that when we stand firm and we advocate for our rights need to be respected. When we advocate for our rights as indigenous peoples and the rights of nature, those rights must be respected. And it also showed to me the power of unity. People told us, there's no way you're going to be able to defeat the government with so many resources or these oil companies. But by coming together, not only as Huaorani communities, but also working together with other indigenous peoples and people around the world, we showed them that we were stronger. What we're pushing for now, we've actually brought our case, this victory before Ecuador's Constitutional Court, which is sort of their equivalent of the Supreme Court, it's the highest court in the nation, to establish a constitutional precedent around the right to prior consultation and consent. And what we're demanding now is that the Constitutional Court come out to our territory and actually have the hearings in our territory.
Congratulations. I mean, it's a strange word to use, but thank you and well done. It's important work.
Yeah, for me, this victory really is a demonstration of the power and strength in unity and the power and strength of telling the truth. We were able to make the world understand that for us, our forest and our territory is everything. It's what matters most. And that we will never give up. Because I see how the government and these companies are continuing to try to come into our lands. They're not going to stop. And so we have to stay strong in our resistance.
What are the biggest kind of threats today to their territory and to the people fighting on the front lines?
Actualmente es una amenaza grande ante el gobierno.
I think one of the biggest threats we face is that the government, despite having legal rights and legal frameworks in place, the government continues not to respect our rights in practice.
Triple, donde nosotros estamos viviendo.
Just recently, Ecuador's president, Guillermo Lasso, issued two executive decrees to massively expand mining and to double oil extraction across Ecuador, which represents an existential threat to our territories. And so part of my journey is to bring visibility around the world to our struggles and to ask people to join with us and to support us. It's not enough for indigenous peoples to be fighting on our own, to be risking our lives on our own to protect some of the Earth's most important ecosystems. We need people around the world to join us and to support us. One concrete way people can do that right now is we have a petition. We're actually challenging the government before Ecuador's highest court, challenging these decrees as unconstitutional. We have a petition to make our message clear that we don't want any extraction on our lands. And so we're going to be asking people around the world to join us by adding their voice, adding their name and their voice to our demands.
We can add a link to the petition in the podcast notes. And are there any other ways that she suggests people who want to help or want to show allyship can support?
Otra gente, lo que yo pido es...
I've seen in my years as a leader and an organizer how time and again, governments, politicians, big organizations, big NGOs get together and talk about climate change solutions. And they talk about the need to direct resources to confront climate change. But what I see is indigenous peoples being left out of that discussion, not being included at the table. And so on the one hand, I would ask people to demand that indigenous peoples' voices are represented and that our interests are represented in these meetings and these decision-making spaces. And on the other hand, I see how these same groups talk about the need to get resources to stop climate change. But those resources never reach frontline communities. And so I have a call that we need to redistribute resources. We need those resources to directly support frontline communities, frontline initiatives, and frontline organizations. And so I would ask people to channel their donations to groups that are having the most impact, small groups on the front lines, because I have seen in my years as a leader lots of talk and no action from these big organizations and these politicians. But where I've seen action and where I've seen results is in the fights that we're waging on the front lines.
Can I ask about the role of women in the community? Is it right to understand that there are kind of strong female leadership and strong women?
Yo estoy sí, correcto. Yo estoy de acuerdo. Respeto de mi cultura.
Historically, among my people and many other indigenous peoples, women had a really powerful role in society. Women were the most important decision makers. Men made decisions in times of war. Men would go hunting, but women were the ones who had the eye to the well-being of the community, the family, and future generations. And we need to bring this back.
The
influence of outside culture has relegated women to the sidelines, even in indigenous communities. And I've seen how men in positions of leadership rarely bring about a positive result. Their actions rarely bring about a positive result. I have seen how they're susceptible to influence from money, susceptible to alcohol. But women, we are strong. And we're always thinking about future generations. And so the role of women in our struggle has been really, really critical, and it's really important that more women are given the opportunity to step into leadership roles, because we're the ones who have the solutions.
And how has your experience of being a mother influenced your activism and your work?
Yo tengo una niña de 7 años y un bebé de 1 año. De mi experiencia, yo...
So I have a daughter who's 7 and a baby boy who's 1 year old. And for me, my children have been my greatest source of strength. Whether, you know, during pregnancy, after pregnancy, I think about them. I think about their future, and I want them to be able to live happy and healthily in a healthy forest, free from contamination. My family has been a huge support for me in my struggle. And I'm really concerned. I see how this global economic system that we're all a part of is creating an imbalance on Earth. And I see the need to educate the next generation, to educate our children.
Por eso es muy importante como mamá sentir y educar a nuestros hijos.
Educate our children to protect the planet, because they're the future. They're the future decision makers, and they're the ones who are going to be living on this planet.
Si no, yo doy
cuenta, you know, to teach them that water, clean air, land, this is what gives us life. And so we need to invest in our future generations through that education.
Es una amenaza grande porque esta economía de
I see how industrialized nations, the U.S. and Europe, you know, the wealth of these societies is really built on the suffering of Mother Earth and the suffering of indigenous peoples. And so we need to educate our children that another way is possible.
Educar a nuestros niños futuros porque ellos van a vivir. Y eso es muy importante, la educación.
And with that other way, can you maybe speak to any messages you want to share from the way that your community, you know, what can be learned?
Yo creo que de aprender de cosmovisión quiere decir que nosotros en la comunidad vivimos conectada con la tierra.
I think one of the biggest lessons from indigenous worldviews is our connection to Earth and our connection to nature, to the animals and to the spirits. This is something that we as indigenous peoples have. But I see in industrialized societies a big disconnect between people and the natural world. And so I think that people can start to shift that by stopping to investing in companies that are destroying our planet. Minimize and stop consuming oil and plastics. I've been really upset in my travels seeing, going into homes or offices and seeing plastic flowers. To me, that's really indicative of this disconnection.
Plantas reales, flores reales.
What are we teaching our children with a plastic flower? You know, a plant is an opportunity to teach a child how to connect with nature, to have a relationship with the natural world. But we have a flower that's made out of plastic and it's not teaching our children anything. It's really important that we take our kids out into nature, that we go on walks in the forest, that we leave behind our technology and our machines for a little bit. And it's really important that we begin to question where our food comes from. But I do believe it's possible to teach the younger generation to value nature and to reconnect with nature. I do believe that it is possible to reestablish that connection that we inherently have with the natural world.
Pero sí pueden adoptar educando, enseñando.
Thank you. You wrote a piece in The Guardian in 2020, Western Civilization is Killing Us, I think was the headline, that I found very, very powerful. It's when I became aware of your work and I contacted Amazon Frontlines to try to speak with you. Maybe do you want to speak a little bit to that message of the problem of Western Civilization?
Yo creo que...
I see a lot of problems with Western society, to name a couple, big agriculture, industrialized agriculture I see is hugely problematic and really damaging to our planet. Oh, taking lands away from people to produce food that doesn't even go to the people that live nearby, but is being shipped across the world for profit.
Pero sin tierra, ¿qué hacemos? Eso es mi preocupación en las sociedades grandes.
And I see how Western society is built on a capitalist system that enriches itself while destroying the planet. There's no investment in the future, there's only an investment in the few. And we need to change the system, because in 30 to 50 years, I think our entire planet's going to collapse. I think these societies will collapse under the weight of the system. And I think that it's up to people in Western societies to sacrifice some of their comfort and some of their wealth, because the system that provides that is a threat to our planet, it's a threat to us as indigenous peoples. And I'm not just talking about people in Ecuador, I mean the global impact of this system is felt everywhere, and it's your responsibility to change that system.
Sacrificar la comunidad de la riqueza que tienen aquí, eso es una.
Because if it doesn't change, it's going to result in the destruction of indigenous peoples and the planet.
Seguir invirtiendo lo que hace dueño, rebajar y mirar y construir de lo que va a dar vida. Y también siento como yo que este sistema de lo que ha venido afectando no solo Ecuador, estoy hablando en global, tienen la responsabilidad, sentir la responsabilidad de ayudar, de parar. Si no hacen eso, es como sería directo, afecta a los pueblos indígenas en general y también nos afecta a la planeta.
Is there anything positive you think in Western society that you think it's worth keeping whilst we try and change this society too?
Como mantener de los derechos.
Something positive that I see that has come from Western society is this concept of rights. That there are rights that must be respected. But I think that those rights need to be strengthened. And in a lot of cases, particularly where I live, we need to ensure that those rights don't just exist on paper, but are applicable in practice. And I'm talking about the rights of indigenous peoples and the rights of nature. We need to ensure that this really beautiful concept of rights that we as indigenous peoples inherently have are respected in practice.
Pero aquí está el sistema más poderoso escrito en el que han escrito las personas.
Which connects to the legal work, I guess, that Namonte and others have been doing.
Eso se conecta, ¿no?, con el trabajo legal que ustedes han estado haciendo.
Sí.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
We need. I have a lot of hope in the law and in legal ways of solving the problems we have.
Yo tengo esperanza en las leyes como un mecanismo de hacer cambios.
It's not enough yet, but it feels like it's coming, more and more laws to protect.
Yo eso estoy de acuerdo también como pueblos indígenas.
I'm in agreement. I see a lot of promise in the creation of new laws. And I also see as an indigenous woman and as a leader how those laws don't just happen on their own. We have to push for them and we have to fight for them. And at the same time, we can't just wait for laws. We need to resist. And our resistance is built on our unity and our strength.
Have you come across the concept ecocide?
¿Has escuchado del concepto de ecocidio?
It's many people are fighting for this law, ecocide, which is like genocide, but for the environment. So it would be illegal if a company or a government does a project that is going to destroy a lot of nature.
Ojalá, esperemos. Y eso también en el mundo hay que construir que.
Let's hope. let's hope that they can push forward a law like that, because I feel like companies need to be punished for getting rich off of the destruction of our planet. I see all over, not just Ecuador, but all over Latin America, how companies are violating our rights and are destroying nature, and there's no repercussions for their actions.
Hacer leyes para que se pueden detener y garantizar.
Do you want to share anything about the criminalization of indigenous activists?
Sí, yo estoy muy preocupado por el compañero.
Yeah, I'm very, very concerned about what is happening in Ecuador right now, which was the unlawful arrest and detention of an indigenous leader in Ecuador, the head of Ecuador's National Indigenous Federation, who, in the middle of the night, while he was in transit, was taken from his vehicle and put in unmarked cars and detained, and we don't know where he is, and we haven't heard from him since. I'm very concerned about the criminalization of indigenous leaders. Right now, there's a national level protest happening in Ecuador where indigenous peoples principally are standing up and demanding that our rights be respected and that the rights of nature be respected. Our protests are being criminalized. If this is happening, if this happens to Leonidas Issa, it can happen to any of us who are standing up to defend Earth. Any Earth defenders are at risk. We're being criminalized and we're being killed across Latin America and across the world. And as a woman leader, I'm not going to stand for this. I'm not just going to stand by while this happens. And we all need to demand our right to defend our lands and to defend Mother Nature.
Respetar ese derecho de los pueblos indígenas que son activistas que defienden para la vida.
Are there any reasons for hope that you have?
Esperanza yo tengo porque
la sociedad es como la persona is seeing the strength of people when we're unified. When we're united and together. And the strength of unity across the world of people who really care about the future of our planet and future generations. If we don't join together, we don't have any hope. But when we join together, we are strong. We're strong enough to make real change. And so I ask people out there, anyone who's listening to this message right now, to be strong. Be courageous, and to join our cause. Our struggle as indigenous peoples, my struggle too, is about protecting life on Earth. But we can't do it alone. And so for everyone out there who's listening to this, I hope you will stand with us and join us so we can fight together in one cause.
Muchas gracias. Thank you so much. So beautiful, so clear.
Muchas gracias. Muy, muy hermoso y muy claro.
Igual a ti.
Thanks as well.
I feel so honored and lucky to have gotten to meet Namonte. Her work has set a precedent for Indigenous community to use legal systems to take action globally. And I found her answer to that question, what would you keep from Western society, really intriguing. That she sees value in the Western rights that legal systems can offer. And it was actually, in fact, Ecuador, which was the first country in the world to enshrine a set of codified rights of nature in the Ecuadorian constitution, recognizing the inalienable rights of ecosystems to exist and flourish, and giving people the authority to petition on behalf of nature. And they actually used some of the indigenous principles to inform the Rights of Nature Bill. Also, as an update on our conversation, the Ecuadorian indigenous leader Namonte referred to, Leonidas Issa, was released from detention less than a day after nationwide protests across the country had been sparked. I hope this conversation has inspired you and stays with you. And I'll finish with a few more of Namonte's words. In all the years of taking, taking, taking from our lands, you've had not the courage or the curiosity or the respect to get to know us, to understand how we see and think and feel and what we know about life on this earth. The earth does not expect you to save her. She expects you to respect her. And we, as indigenous people, expect the same. Thank you so much to Nomonte, Alex, SIBO Alliance, and Amazon Frontlines for setting up this conversation. We'll be back next week with more from the Who Cares Presents Extraordinary Women. Thank you so much for listening to Who Cares Wins with me, Lily Cole. We are so grateful for the guidance and resources from She Changes Climate on this series, an organization enabling women in all their diversity to lead just climate action globally. And for the music that's been provided by the very wonderful musician, Cosmo Sheldrake. If you like this episode and would like other people to hear it, we'd be so grateful if you would rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts from. And to hear reasons to be optimistic, we have another little Who Cares Wins drop this Friday. This is a Mags Creative production. Catch you next time. Bye.